Welcome back. We're here live, 2015 edition of Build. I'm here with some fabulous people. Why don't you introduce yourselves and tell us what you do? We'll start over here.
Yeah, my name is Imo Landruf. I'm a program manager on the .NET team.
Okay.
I'm also an advisory council member of the .NET Foundation.
You have a really interesting accent. Are you from Florida or something?
Close.
Okay.
The weather is almost identical in Germany to Florida.
Oh, but Germany. It's a little off there. Martin.
So I'm Martin Woodward. I'm the executive director of the .NET Foundation.
You're definitely from Florida.
Yeah, definitely from Florida. It's via James Bond.
Oh, got it.
I'm Beth Massey. I'm a technical evangelist for the .NET Foundation.
Got it.
So, and I'm Jay Schmelzer. I'm a director of program management for the .NET team, as well as the president of the .NET Foundation.
Oh my goodness.
I know.
So we should get your chair up higher, the president. That's
she will lower our chair.
Yes. So let's just start with this obvious question. What is the .NET Foundation? Why do we need it?
Well, I can take that one. I mean, so we created the .NET Foundation a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And what we were really looking to do was create an independent entity that would allow us to kind of bring together and continue to foster a lot of the open source innovation that's happening around .NET and kind of bring it together into one kind of more cohesive community and more cohesive ecosystem.
As a developer on the Microsoft ecosystem, what does that mean for me?
Well, it means the bunch of stuff now is open source that you're using. So all the underpinnings of what you're using, so .NET Core, the compiler, Roslyn, everything there is now all open source. If you want to go see what's happening, you can just go in there, go up to GitHub, go check out the actual source code. If then you find an issue with a library, like when I was, back before, when I had a real job, before I came to work for Microsoft,
right, a real job.
I went and found an issue with like the dictionary class,
right.
System.dictionary. And back then, like my way of fixing that was to, log in through Connect, blah, 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 and then like, raise a bug and then get it rejected and then come back and say, no, it is a real, I'll say defect, because
right.
Maybe in America can understand what I say when I say
yeah,
the word bug.
I thought you were from Florida, man.
Yeah.
Come on.
No, so when you do, if you get a defect or something, so system, the dictionary class, here's the issue with it. You can raise an issue on GitHub. We can have a look. The developers are right there checking in and out code every day. And say, oh yeah, it's an issue. And you can maybe even come in and say, well, actually, this is what I think is the fix. Here's how I think this code should be fixed. And the guys who work on the team can take a look at that fix and say, yeah, that looks good. We'll check it in. And then, the next Visual Studio 2015 comes out, or there's an update to Windows Update, it's fixed. And you
so
did that.
There's a big difference between open source and source open. Can you talk about the distinction and talk about which one we are at .NET Foundation?
So yeah, I think like source open is the interesting thing that Microsoft did for a couple of years now. So we always had like some projects were licensed on an open source license, which basically means in theory you can take it whenever you want, so that's great. But the difference is that the team itself still lives in this Redmond area behind the Death Star, right? But you don't see what's happening.
Yeah.
Every once in a while we would come out, drop some source, and then disappear again.
Oh.
And all the way that works is we are actually on GitHub. So as Martin just said, like we are literally working there. So. Yeah, when we do code reviews on our team, we always do code reviews. But in the past, they were always private, internal at Microsoft. Now they're just normal pull requests on GitHub. So let's say Martin and I work on the same team, and he submits something, he does a code review, he submits it as a pull request on GitHub. And so the team members can comment on that and say, Martin, you completely screwed up that line over here.
Right.
But the really amazing piece is that not just we can comment on that, the community can also comment on that. And so from our point of view, whether you are an external guy that wants to submit a change, or you're an internal guy, you're in code review, it's the same process. So we're all playing in the same sandbox. And that basically also means that we make contributors way more successful because we give you the context that you need in order to be successful.
Right.
Like the whole tribal knowledge that we have about how the GC is architected, why does the JIT the way it looks, that was previously just implementation details that we say, you don't need to know that, it just works.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to contribute to that and let's say port the CLR to Mac or Linux or FreeBSD as it happened a couple of weeks ago, you have to know all the secret sauce as well. You can't just say, oh, according to MSDN, it's just magic and it happens to work. Because if you are the one of the people that make that magic work now, so you have to deal with that.
That's awesome. So I think the takeaway from that is you announced the next version of the Death Star is coming out. Is that what you... So in a serious note, what projects are there in the .NET Foundation, and how does someone sort of become part of a .NET Foundation project.
Do you want to cover off some of the projects?
Actually, we have a ton of projects in the Foundation. I think there's over 35 of them now. And they're not all just Microsoft, right? They're not all just Microsoft. We have a lot of projects that contributed from, you know, Salesforce and, you know, other companies, and Bracco.
Yeah, ThinkTecture.
And so it's the Foundation is not just about, like, legal protection either. It's about, like, you know, it's about governance. It's about saying, hey, we have like a really good model for doing open source. How do we create these practices, best practices for all of these projects within the Foundation?
How do we make
it
really easy for the projects to, you know, get access to services that we've set up for, you know, we've set up for say 35 projects. How do we then, you know, allow other projects to come in and start to use those services?
Right.
And today, just go to the .netfoundation.org website. dotnetfoundation.org website, and you can visit FAQ there, and is, you know, how to join, and just come along and contact us, and then we'll get in touch. It'll probably be me who sends you an email.
So, got it.
And then we'll get started.
So I will tell you, we're live, so make sure you ask questions and have them come in. Otherwise, I'm just going to ask whatever I want, and that also works too.
That's always good.
So the other question I had was, say I'm a developer that does an open source project. How do I make that part of the .NET Foundation, or is it something I want to do? Why would I want to do it, and what would be the process?
Yeah. First of all, we care that projects are, we care you're just putting your source code as open source, you know what
right.
I mean? That's our primary goal, is to make sure we have a strong ecosystem around open source for .NET developers. So first of all, make it open. That's mission, you know, job number one. Right, it's open source now, great. And then if you want to come part of the Foundation, just say, go to the .netfoundation.org website and contact us and get in touch. And then we will talk. We'll go through, like, you know, what, you know, do you want to be part of the Foundation? What's in it for you? That sort of thing. What the, you know, pros and cons of being in the Foundation. And then see if you want to come on board. We'd love to have everybody.
So I love that. So say I have a really good .NET open source project.
Yeah.
What would be the compelling reasons why I should say, you know what, I should consider joining the .NET Foundation?
For me, the main thing is it's about we can help you scale in terms of, like, there's a bunch of stuff which as an engineer you don't, and a developer, you don't really want to have to worry about, you know, like blah blah blah, legal blah blah blah.
Yeah,
you know? Exactly, switch off.
Like, you probably said something technical, but I heard blah 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 legal, because that's what I hear
all
every
that
time.
Stuff, like, you know, should we have client, you know, should we make people fill out a form when they're contributing something so that we can, so we've got some like legal sign off for them, and do we do those sorts of things? We can help you there. We can provide a set of, you know, help you with the administration, all the boring stuff that you don't want to do because you just want to focus on the code. We can help you when it comes to marketing your project, you know, we can promote your project, things like that. And we can also help you, you know, with providing a set of core back-end services that you might need. Like, do you need help with build infrastructure? You know, it turns out we know quite a lot of people with some servers in the cloud somewhere, and, you know, so we can help you get the stuff you need.
It also gives you access to a bigger community, right?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I mean, that's like the key. Like, having all of these projects in a foundation that can talk to each other, it's not just about sharing best practices, but it's also about getting developers, you know, that are, you know, working on similar things across projects, like, you know what you can work on, right?
That's,
you
know? That's where I was going to go, is that it's really, I think that the number one thing that the Foundation will bring right now is just visibility, right? Both visibility amongst other .NET developers that are interested in participating, contributing in on your project and helping you with it, but also visibility to .NET developers that are going to take advantage and use that project as part of one of their applications. That's, when we talk to open source project owners, that is usually the number one thing they're looking for, is just help with promoting and visibility to what they're working on.
Got it. So we do have some questions. How would you compare this foundation to how Java is maintained? I don't know a lot about how Java is maintained.
Well, but I can start and you guys can chime in. I think there's a couple interesting things that are important to think about. There's the .NET Foundation, and when we talk about governance and things like that, we're really talking about the boring aspect of how the foundation itself is run, right? A unique aspect of the way we approach the .NET Foundation is we don't get in and mess around with the projects, right? The projects determine how they're going to govern themselves, what model they're going to use, those kinds of things. We have people available, we have an advisory council available to help, right, if you're not sure which way to use, you know, which approach to take, which direction to go with your project, but the project is owned by the project owner, right?
Yeah.
So separating kind of the .NET Foundation from .NET itself is an important thing. So .NET as a set of projects then have a governance model around them. And those are still owned by the owners of the .NET projects. They determine the direction of it. they set the course for how they're going to go and manage the open source development of .NET. And that's the part that is more analogous to the way Java, right? Yeah. Java has a project and a foundation and foundations around it that really take a heavier hand in the direction of Java.
So right? you don't necessarily want to dictate the direction of the OSS project, you want to protect the project.
We explicitly do not want to dictate to the OSS project. They are a community, you know, they are the project, and what we want to do is help get more hands-on keyboards to help contribution to that project.
Got it. A question from Andrew, that which is probably one of the most important. Where can I get that .NET t-shirt?
Yeah,
I know. They were swarmed. Like, literally, I was swarmed here at Build.
You should get a store on the website.
Yeah.
So maybe do that.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll work on that, Andy. That's a good idea.
That's a great idea.
Get some funds for the foundation.
All right, so Anton asks, how is the work progressing on the ECMA standard for the latest version of C#? Is C# one of the projects in the .NET Foundation?
Yes.
The Roslyn project, right?
Got it.
The compiler project for C# and Visual Basic is one of the projects in the foundation. Matter of fact, it's actually, I guess it was earlier in February, we hit an interesting milestone, you know, thinking as the .NET team guy right now, we hit an interesting milestone where we actually now have runtime, framework, ASP.NET layer, entity framework layer, and compiler stack for .NET Core 5. All open source, all on GitHub. So
that's the whole enchilada to
whole
use a food reference.
You would know.
Yeah, I would know, yeah. That's cool. All right, so next question. Will Minecraft be open sourced and written in .NET as well?
That would be a question for the Minecraft.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I think that brings into relief the fact that the .NET Foundation isn't in line to tell people what to do.
Yeah.
You're sort of in line to sort of put these protective services
around. And help them. Provide mentorship and things like that. Like, we've got a bunch of, like, on the advisory accounts, you know, people like Sean Walker and all these people who've got tons of experience doing open source .NET. It's about bringing these guys together and girls together and helping everybody contribute and get better at doing open source.
Yeah, it's important actually to note that, right? The foundation is like, it's really about the community helping us build this together, right? It's not just Microsoft and us. Yeah, we work for Microsoft and we're part of it, but the advisory council, most of the members are just part of that community, right? So that's important to know.
So here's a question. How is the foundation structured? And I know we've talked about like a set of services that you do provide to the projects. What are those explicitly? What would be those things? So structure and then services.
So the structure's, yeah, as far as a project's concerned, they probably don't care about the structure. You know, it's again, blah, 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 legal, blah, blah, blah. But it's an independent, you know, non-profit foundation. It's its own company. It's got a board of directors. So Jay and Janugu and Mikhail Deakasa are all directors of that company. And then I'm the executive director. Beth's officially the company secretary, I think, or something like that.
You know,
so we're all got roles in the company. And then we have the advisory council, who are, again, from the community. And they play the lead role in like deciding what governance models we want to have, how we want to help projects and things. But as a project coming to the foundation, you know, you don't really care. We're just there as a company that can exist on your behalf to help you with your project, to bring more hands to keyboards to help you, you know, get more successful.
Let's talk a little bit about how you help bring the hands to keyboard in this project. Anybody have any input on that?
Well, I mean, as Martin said, I mean, the first thing is you need to open source your project, right? I mean, that's, to me, the most important step. And anybody who does it for the first time will quickly learn that there's more to than just the code. There's very much the people community aspect to it, how you interact with people. Actually being on GitHub, being responsive to questions is an important part of it.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that everybody has to learn on their own, how that works. Because also every project is slightly different. The communities are slightly different. And that's one of the other reasons why I think the foundation is such a great idea, is because you bring all these projects together. And I mean, Microsoft is a huge company. We had some pieces in Microsoft some people in Microsoft that really knew how to do open source. But you know, every team that does some open source now has to go through the same learning experience. And we benefit tremendously from interacting with the other projects like ASP.NET. Like, we work very closely with the Roslyn team, for example, because we open source roughly in the same time frame. And there's lots of challenges around that. And I think just bringing people together and seeing, you know, what's happening, That's, I think, a big thing to make the project successful.
Helping people learn what works, what doesn't work, yes. You know, what kind of tone you need to have in your projects, that sort of thing. There's just lots of learning we need to do and mentoring around the teams.
It's not just being an engineer, it's being a social engineer, obviously.
Yes. Yeah,
that's really what it is.
It's really it is social engineering than software engineering half the time.
Right.
So let's pretend I'm making a brand new open source project called FizzBuzz.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's a very important enterprise ready application that I'm going to build. And I'm like, I put it on GitHub, it's open, and it's starting to pick up. What does the actual process look like of me joining the .NET Foundation? Okay. Is there like, do you guys evaluate, or do I come to you?
Yeah.
Is it like an awkward first date where we're trying to feel each other out, you know what I'm saying? I've known these people for a long time, okay?
It's been way too close to you to be talking about that.
Yeah, so is it like really awkward? Like, is it like this? So what is the process like? FizzBuzz, .NET Foundation.
You start off with a conversation, send us an email, let's have an email, let's talk. Let's talk about, is there stuff that we can provide for you? And then what are those services about? What are you going to get out from that? If you're doing FizzBuzz and you're open source, maybe not. Maybe, but we'll still help promote you. We'll still help promote, make sure the open source is accessible to people and, you can get hold of things. But not every .NET application wants to come into the foundation. It's more about, do you need some help scaling? Do you need some help with, support? Is the services we can provide you? So it's where can we help?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the times what happens is we'll see, it's the first to reach out and contact us, right? And we'll talk about, hey, let's learn a little bit about your project and what you're trying to accomplish with it, right? A lot of times it's, we have a lot of them from internal teams that start, right? Where they're like, hey, we want to open source this. We're great, let's have a conversation. What license are you thinking about?
And they go,
I don't know.
Which one's good?
Right? Okay, what governance model are you thinking about? I don't know.
Who's going to maintain this
project? How are you thinking about sustaining the project, right? Those kinds of things. And we help them kind of map out that strategy so that when they open source, they have a good experience and they're set up to actually start, surviving and growing in that kind of an environment.
Got it.
We got to make sure that these projects are ready to grow. That's the whole idea. We don't take projects that are like, okay, here you go, bye, see ya, it's open source, I'm leaving. That's not the idea at all.
A unique aspect of the .NET Foundation compared to some other ones is that we don't have one way that things have to be done, right? We don't have one license that we say all projects must use. We have a few that we recommend, and we have a few that we do not recommend, and we actually wouldn't allow a project in. So part of our goal is we want open source projects that are both great for an open source community, but also for commercial interest as well, right? So there are a couple licenses that are just not good for commercial interests,
and we
try to stay away from
those. We also want to cover the breadth adoption of the, we think that the best way to get a breadth adoption of your open source project is to have, a very permissive open source license. And especially with the rise of the internet, the most successful open source projects tend to be the most, permissively licensed ones, and you rely on the network effect, that the internet gives you to actually bring contribution back.
Right. So there is a question. Does the .NET Foundation have open source licenses that they recommend most? You kind of alluded to that. What are the licensings that are good, and what are the ones that are bad, and why do we make the distinction?
I was going to say, if you look at the projects we have today, there are two licenses that are the common ones that we see today. There's the MIT license. That's one actually that, as Microsoft, we've been using that as our more preferred one lately because it's just simple.
It's one paragraph.
It's simple, it's straightforward, it's easy to understand.
All caps.
Yeah, and it's a good license. The Apache license is the other one we see the most often, right?
Yeah, they're both permissive licenses, both very explicit in what they give, And then we do have some MSPL projects in there
as well.
Yeah,
we do have some.
But they're kind of the three main licenses we have right now.
What are the ones that you wouldn't take and why? I know that's a hard question, but I want to ask it.
One of the reasons is we want to make sure these projects have a future, right? And so we would not take a project if it looks like it's going to be abandoned, honestly.
Got it.
So, and what we also is we need a project to be a proper OSI approved open source license. So again, Emo talks about the past. In the past, we kind of had a couple of licenses like MSLPL, which is lawyers aren't here, but one could argue it's not a true open source license.
Right.
because it says things, you know, it might have clauses in it like you can only use it on Windows. We don't want those projects. Those projects are not allowed.
Got it.
If you can only use it for research purposes or academic purposes, that project isn't allowed in the foundation. You have to be a true open source project to be part of the foundation.
Got it. So here's a good question that I think will bring into relief what the .NET Foundation does and doesn't do. The question is, how do you validate fixes submitted? Will you provide a test battery to verify the fix before an OSS contributor submits the fix? And I think this is a good question to clarify what the .NET Foundation does and what they don't do.
So yeah, is go talk to the project lead and ask them what they do for their project. So you would get, so Emo is a project lead for CoreFX. So yeah, what would you do for your project?
So what we do on almost all of our projects now is we have a CI system, which basically means the way it works on GitHub is usually a CI system is you submit some code and then the magic happens. And the way it works in open source is that you set it up in such a way that even if you submit a PR, your PR is subject to this CI system. And what we do at Microsoft is we have a long history of like a gazillion tests, right? We have super complicated scenarios. We have internal infrastructure that does load testing and crazy other stuff that we do. And we try to get meaningful tests out. So we don't want to give, you know, just all the tests as part of the CI system because we don't want to wait for like 3 weeks before you get an answer from the CI system.
Wow.
But at the same time, you want to get like, you know, what are the actual meaningful tests that we should run? Obviously, unit tests are part of that, like simple stuff, input, output checks. And then, you know, this thing turns green when the CI server says that's fine. But there's obviously still the human component as well. Like people look at the actual code and see whether that, you know, the code is well written, whether it's, you know, following the style guides that we have. And then there's
publicly documented in the open source project as well.
Even better, they don't just document, you actually have a tool that you just run over your code and it just turns it into what we consider the okay style guide.
Got it.
And then there's the whole other aspects to it. Just, you know, is the design sound? Do we like the APIs that you submitted? Do we think the result is usable? And that's very subjective to whatever the process is, right?
Got it.
That's a per project thing. The .NET Foundation
Yeah,
doesn't
and
care.
I think it's important to, there's a very fine line between what the .NET Foundation does and what the project is. So you're answering as a team lead of an open source project within the .NET Foundation, but there's no prescription to the project from the foundation.
That. Exactly. I mean, we recommend you probably want to have a build server because it makes it easy for people to validate their changes when they come in and know what the state is of a project. You probably want to, you know, we definitely want to use pull requests, you know what I mean, to do code reviews.
Right.
And those pull requests should have a build, but they're recommendations, not mandates.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is we want these projects to be successful, right?
Yep.
And so part of that means that if you're going to take contributions, the person making the contribution needs to be confident that it's going to be a successful contribution. It's not going to break things. So you need to have that enough of that infrastructure in place so that they can run tests and confidently submit, you know, from their side before even it hits, you know, a human to look at it.
Can you do it as an, you know, one of the problems in open sourcing stuff from Microsoft is that you can't just, oftentimes, you can't just go into Visual Studio on a random, you know, retail build of Windows and just hit F5, you know? It, unfortunately, not many of our solutions were like that.
Right.
And so you've got to make, is this really easy for people to pick up and build? Do you have instructions on how to build? Do you have instructions on how to contribute? That's where we give recommendations. Mm.
I actually think that CoreFX and CoreCLR, they do a really good job of saying, hey, here are the things we label that are up for grabs. So meaning that the engineers could totally do these things probably super fast in their sleep, but we're actually giving, like, you know, these kind of low-hanging fruit to the community so that they can get started easily and get going, right? I think that's a brilliant idea.
Around so that people can get started.
Yeah. I mean, in general, I think the foundation wants to have healthy projects, right? Yeah. And health is something that is very subjective to whatever your project is.
Right.
I mean, there's general practices that are established, like you want to have people on GitHub and actually be responsive. You don't want to have this, you know, once a year, this is one guy that goes over the GitHub pull request and says, yep, nope. You want to have a continuous development happening on GitHub, right? And so, like, there's no prescription that, you know, you should have checked GitHub every 5 minutes or so. But the expectation for a healthy project is you are there, right? It's not just this thing that you do every once in a while. And I think once you go down that path, there's a whole bunch of things that come with that. It's not just CI servers, it's not just pull requests, but there's just how do you interact with the community and how do you deal with that? And
And it's not just about code contributions either. I mean, you can contribute. Yeah. Like, you can be a contributor. You don't have to write code on the CLR. I can't write code for that project. But I can go in and I can say, hey, maybe file a bug or fix some documentation.
You can blog about the fact that it exists. You can give talks to the community about the fact that it exists.
That's exactly right.
So here's a good question, which I think it's kind of an interesting one. How would you handle an open source project which needs some closed source third-party libraries? Is that something that you would take or not take?
We would probably wouldn't take. I mean, we would have to work with them to see how we can, how somebody who doesn't have the license to that library would work. Now, it's different if that closed library is a library that exists on different platforms, you know. So if you're thinking about, you know, what about if you're using some controls from a third-party vendor, then that probably is not going to make sense. But if it's because you're calling into a cryptography API that's in Windows and a different one that's on Mac and a different one on Linux, well, that makes sense because somebody can take the project down and build it. So, we'd have to talk to them.
Yeah, that's a situation we haven't hit yet, but I think we'd have to just work with that project and figure out if there's a path.
Everybody needs to be able to take that project and be able to build it out in the community.
So you mentioned something interesting because I have a little dinky stuff that I put up and that people are starting to do pull requests on GitHub. You talk about governance model. What does that mean for someone that just stuck something up on GitHub and now people actually are using it and are trying to do pull requests? What's the governance models you suggest and how do we open source developers think about this?
Well, I'll start with just what is the role of the governance model for the project? And it's basically part of what makes an open source project successful is that it is completely open and transparent, including how are you deciding what pull requests you're going to accept? How are you deciding what direction the project's going to go? Well, that's what the governance model determines. It's like you are articulating, how is that going to work? Is it a benevolent dictator? Like there's one person, like, you know, Python is run that way.
I get to decide what's in my project because I say so. You know what I mean?
There's lots of different models. So you can chat about the different models,
right? Benevolent dictator. And then you also have models where it's like a voting-based system, you know, so if you get, you know, you have to have so many like plus ones and, you know, if somebody comes in with a minus one, then it means that they're not gonna, it's not, you know.
Or you have a meritocracy.
So it's lots of different ways that people can run. And we, you know, give some recommendations. Who's in charge of your project? You know, who do I go contact if I want something to happen? Are you gonna respond to pull requests? How do I contribute?
It's basically setting expectations. You know, you want to set a certain set of expectations up for the project so that people know how to contribute to it.
Yeah.
I would just add that if you just start with open source, I wouldn't think necessarily that this is all complicated and I have to make all these decisions up front. The one thing that often happens is you just want to open source something. The library has this, you know, some sort of size. You just want to step into this and you will quickly find out what works and what doesn't work for you. So you don't have to necessarily make all decisions up front. And what you often see in open source, which I think is generally an interesting governance model, is that because it's, you know, if you look at GitHub and Git in particular, the whole system is designed to be distributed. So essentially, people vote by the fact that they fork your code base and do something interesting with it. So what you see in Linux, for example, is that, you know, generally you would say there is this benevolent dictator, Linus Torvalds, that decides what goes in and what doesn't. And sometimes he says, I don't want to take this particular patch over here. But then what he finds is that many of his other people that he pulls from actually take that patch. And so somebody just said, okay, if everybody thinks it's a good thing, I was probably wrong.
Right.
And so that's another thing that I think generally works is that, you know, people experiment a lot and you don't necessarily know what the right thing is from the get-go. And you can change your mind along the way as well. So, I mean, there's not necessarily this one model that you just follow to the letter, right?
And it's an interesting thing when you need to start scaling as well. Like, you start scaling and you are in charge because you're the only person who cares about this project. When something gets big, you need to start scaling and have, you know, like somebody else who you trust to be a committer on your project as well.
Yep.
Got it. So there's an interesting question here from Girish. What if someone makes a .NET project? It's kind of scrolled at the bottom. What if someone makes a project that's in the .NET Foundation, they fork it and commercialize it?
Yeah. That's awesome.
That's great.
Cool.
Yeah. And that's the thing, like if you want to commercialize it, that's great. My sense is that you do OSS because, look, I love machine learning. I wrote a machine learning library primarily because I wanted to understand it better and I stuck it up so that people could look at it and tell me, oh, you're dumb here, you did this, but, and that's okay. But if you want to commercialize it, maybe you shouldn't open source it.
Well, no. It depends, interestingly. So
let's hear, this is interesting.
So, first of all, as far as the foundation's concerned, if somebody goes and takes that stuff, we are concerned with making sure they've adhered to your terms of a license.
Got it.
So you need to respect the terms of the open source license. If that, you know, if that license says you can take this as long as you, you know, spin around in circles and say, ha-ha, three times, then somebody has to do that. If somebody says you have to give any changes to this code back, you have to do that. So we help make sure people respect the terms of your license.
Got it.
Most of our licenses say, take it, please don't sue me, you know? And then so they're free to just take it and commercialize it if they want. Now, having a business model that relies on top of open source is, again, that's kind of up to you to come up with a business model. We
right.
can, you know, chat to some things. But, you know, Microsoft business model is, you know, well, we can monetize in different ways. You know, we can, like, sell you Windows boxes. We can sell you services in Azure. And that's how we, like, pay for the development of our stuff. But other people have different ways. People would sell a content management system, but sell consulting services based on top of that content management system that's now more popular
right.
because more people are using it.
So just to wrap up,
yep.
where can people go to find out more to see if this is something they want to form a part of?
.netfoundation.org.
And then obviously the important t-shirt question, I don't think we know the answer to that.
Yeah, we're gonna work on that.
We're gonna work on that.
Yeah.
So we have like 30 seconds left. What projects are you most interested in the .NET Foundation that sort of strike you as a developer that you like?
CoreFX for me.
I honestly, the first time I saw the .NET Foundation page, I was actually surprised how many projects I didn't know about. So I would just encourage everybody to just get into the list and make up your mind. Like, I am very biased, obviously, so I wouldn't necessarily get a recommendation, but there's something in for everybody, I would claim.
It's true.
All right, well, thanks so much for spending some time with us. Take a look at it, .NETFoundation.org. We will be back after the break. See you next time.